Acting Unit Chief for Prosecution and Judicial Statistics at BJS. That's pretty much all you need to know about me. One thing, and Suzanne will get to this as we kind of work through logistics, but we want to kind of leave the option open for you all to not identify yourselves. So, you know, a normal conference call might start with going around introductions. We're going to skip that. And so kind of proceed with logistics and then substance.
Right, and we also are recording this teleconference. We plan to record it and then make a transcript available so that anybody who was unable to attend today's teleconference can hear the questions that were asked or at least get the answers that would come from any email questions as well. So we'll go ahead and get started. Again, the solicitation is the analysis of publicly available court data. And with this solicitation, BJS is seeking to reestablish our state court data collections. At this time, we do not have a national picture of how many cases are filed, dismissed, or convicted, whether they're convicted of the highest charge or if they're convicted of lesser charges, or if they're diverted into non-criminal justice outcomes. So the primary goal for this data collection is criminal data. But the solicitation does allow applicants to examine civil data sources as well. BJS is statutorily limited on what civil data it can collect. So the collection of civil data is limited to the cases where civil and criminal justice intersect. Historically, this has included tort data, contracts cases, motor vehicle cases, medical malpractice cases, and other such similar cases where there was a violation of a law along with a civil outcome. The civil case could be filed in addition to or instead of the criminal case. So today's call is, again, to allow people who may be interested in applying for this collection to ask questions about this particular solicitation. Again, on this call, we are going to ask that you do not identify yourself or your organization because we want to keep anonymity as clearly as we can. I will remind you that this call is being recorded and will be available. We're still working on how we're going to make that available, but please feel free to email me. I'll give you my email address in a minute in order to get the copy of that transcript. I will note at this time that there were two errors included on the solicitation. The solicitation incorrectly, we worked back and forth on whether we were going to have one teleconference or two teleconferences. We decided on one teleconference, but the solicitation references two. This will be the only teleconference, so there will not be a follow-up one. And then directly underneath that statement, and this is on page 7, it states that the project's going to be funded in two phases. We decided against that, and we are going to award the full amount of $2 million for all four phases of the project with the understanding that if any of the phases of the project are not met, BJS retains the option to close the grant early. Today, I would like to let you know that you can submit questions, obviously, via telephone, so on the phone right now, or you can email them to me. I have my email open, so I will get them right away. My email address is not on the solicitation, but the spelling of my name is, so that should be helpful. My email address is Suzanne, which is S-U-Z-A-N-N-E, dot M as in Mary, dot Strong, S-T-R-O-N-G, at usdoj.gov. As we stated in the solicitation, we were making ourselves available to have questions submitted in advance via email and telephone. At this time, BJS received two calls. Is there some feedback going on people's lines?
Yes.
Yes.
I I guess if we could ask you, if you're not asking a question, if you could mute just in case. Thank you.
I'll restate my email just in case, but it's Suzanne, S-U-Z-A-N-N-E, dot M, dot Strong, S-T-R-O-N-G, at usdoj.gov. Again, we've received two calls with questions prior to today's teleconference, so I am going to share with you the questions that we received and the answers that I provided. Let me see if I can move this out of the way a little bit. The first question was, can data collected during the AP-ACD, either from the courts themselves or from the compilation of information about state court access laws, be used for the contractor's own research? The answer is that any data collections that are funded by BJS belongs to BJS, and they cannot be used by the contractor until BJS releases the data to the public. The contractor cannot use any data collected that is not included in the public use file, which is stripped of all personally identifiable information. However, at this time, BJS does not know the quality and extent of the data that we could collect in this effort. In some of our other collections, such as the National Crime Victimization Survey and our corrections data sets, BJS makes restricted access data available under certain agreements. We may also make a more complete data file available under restricted access with the data collected in this effort, but we first have to see what kind of data we can collect. And then also to the part about state court access laws. As noted in the solicitation, the information gathered as part of the state court data laws may be published as a BJS-funded report. However, in some circumstances, BJS has allowed contractors to use such data in other projects, but that is always on a case-by-case basis. The data cannot be used without express permission from BJS. The second question was, there are potentially three reports, the State Court Data Access Report, the final BJS co-authored report, and the final report summarizing the project. Would all three of these be published? So again, the state court records report may be published as that information is helpful to the public. If the data are collected and the BJS co-authored report is published, the final report may or may not be published. That is, if BJS and the contractor are able to publish the findings from the data collected, the final project report could remain an internal document outlining the challenges and successes of the project and recommendations for future collections of the data. If the project is not successful, that final project report should be published so that the public knows the level of effort that is required to obtain and report these data and why the project failed. And the third question that we received is BJS moving towards shorter reports? And that is a yes. BJS is moving away from a history of one project, one report model. Depending on the quality and representativeness of this data collection, multiple reports could be published by BJS and also by the contractor. However, the first report must be the co-authored BJS contractor report on the data. Once that report is published and the data are archived, the contractor can use the archived data to prepare as many reports as it likes. BJS is also able to prepare multiple reports from the data. BJS and the contractor could work together or separately on these reports, as it all depends on the data that are collected. And again, those are a summary of the questions that BJS received prior to this teleconference, and we'd now like to open the line to your questions. I will remind you that the questions and answers are being recorded, and again request that you do not identify yourself or your organization.
Hi, I have a quick question.
Sure.
So I know for some of the other data, like say for the NCVS, it's collecting data from surveys that are being administered to private individuals, and so the embargo there makes sense. I was wondering if the embargo still applies if the data is already available to the public that's being collected.
It depends on, and this is part of kind of the initial scoping of this that's envisioned under this project. If the data are truly available without restriction to access, then I don't think BJS plans to construct an additional embargo or construct an additional barrier to access to those data, even if BJS compiles those data from multiple jurisdictions. In all probability, assuming this goes forward, different jurisdictions will impose different restrictions on the use of their data. And so BJS will have to, and the contractor will have to kind of work through all of that to try to see what BJS can publish and archive in terms of data and what kind of access level we're permitted to grant on those data. And we acknowledge that this is a little bit different from surveys of private individuals. And in one respect, these are all kind of parts of public records, but how those data are made available electronically by different jurisdictions varies significantly.
So just to follow up on that, just so I'm clear, so any data that are publicly available and freely available, so meaning without access or data use restrictions, for any of those data, there would not be this embargo, and any research organization could use those to conduct their own research as they acquire them during the course of this project. Is that correct?
I'll let Kevin answer again.
I don't want to give an unqualified yes as an answer to that question. This is, to be honest, this is new territory for BJS because you can imagine a world where one subset of the data are completely and totally freely accessible, and you know there are no restrictions on what BJS and its data collection agent do once they've collected and analyzed those data. But then you can imagine a data set that's not particularly, that would not be the data set that BJS used to produce its publications. So where, it may be three states allow complete and total and free access. And BJS would do some analysis on those data, but then a BJS report is, our objective is to produce national estimates. So we may not, we wouldn't just use those three states for obvious reasons. To the question, if it were three states, for example, would that data be accessed or archived? I can imagine a situation where we have kind of different data sets with different levels of access, if that's something that's within the capability of our archive.
As to the use of data prior to the first BJS co-authored publication, there can't be any reports that come out prior to that initial report, the BJS contractor authored report, because that's always been a BJS standard that BJS collected the data, BJS should be the first to report on it, and it should adhere to BJS standards of publication.
I see, okay, thanks. No, I think that answers the question. So even though the data may be freely available, by which I mean without available to the public without restrictions, we would still need to wait for that archiving process on your end before we would use it for any research purposes.
Strictly speaking, you would only have to await the publication. So the archiving sometimes occurs after that first publication, but once it's that first publication is published and available to the public, that's when the data can be used.
Correct.
Sorry if I misunderstood the original question.
Thanks.
Hi, we have a question.
Please.
So the funding is to, you're expecting it to be released and the award to be released in September, correct?
Oh, so that's tricky. So we are expecting it to be awarded in October. The solicitation should close in enough time that we're able to get everything cleared to be awarded in October. I know this past fiscal year we did have some hiccups in the awarding process and the funds weren't released until January, but we believe we can hit the October schedule.
Okay, so is there any flexibility for an award recipient to delay the start date because of hiring constraints or to be able to get the qualified people onboarded to for the project?
I think that would be difficult to answer that question in the abstract because simply because of the way we envision this, different skill sets are going to be needed at different times. So I think that BJS would prefer that those skill sets that are going to be needed right out of the gate, which are kind of ability to look at public laws and figure out what data are available where, those skill sets, BJS would prefer that those skill sets be available upon award. There may be some flexibility kind of, you know, as we move down towards kind of proof of concept and actual data collection and not having those people sitting, you know, in cubicles or offices on October 1st.
Thank you.
I have a question.
Yeah.
This just gets back to what we were talking, what you were talking about earlier about the embargo being lifted after BJS has its first publication. Is there some timeline on when that publication, on when you expect to be able to publish? Is that right at the end of the 3-year term? Might it take an additional time? That's part one of my question.
That's always a very good question. So BJS does have publication standards, which we will provide to the awardee, the recipient of funds. The current timeline has the report at the end of the 3-year period. So it's assumed that there's time within the award for data analysis, generation of tables, and compilation of that report in the 3-year period. Now, we all know that projects rarely stick to the idealized timeline, and there could be some delay in the report. But at the current time, it's envisioned that that report will be at the end of the 3-year timeline.
Okay. And just to clarify, so I'm absolutely certain about this, regardless of whether the data is public or are public, and I guess by public, I think we mean fee-based and free, regardless of the status of the data being public, nothing can come out until that publication. Is that correct?
That's correct.
Okay. Got it. Crystal clear.
I have a question.
Go ahead.
So to the extent that you said that this is focused on criminal rather than civil, is that just because the civil data that you are authorized to seek is limited? Or is there actually more of a focus on criminal than the solicitation would suggest, and solicitation suggests that you know, decisions need to be made about what data in both systems can be collected?
So I'm going to unpack that just a little bit. So yes, BJS does have guidelines and statutory restrictions on what civil data that we can collect. In our statute, it's pretty clear that it's civil data as it relates to criminal justice outcomes. So if there is a motor vehicle accident and somebody's been found at fault, the motor vehicle accident, the person will be charged in that with a traffic case, but then could also be sued in a motor vehicle tort for damages or injuries. So technically, in that criminal event, there were two separate outcomes in the criminal justice system and the civil justice system. So we couldn't just go and collect the number of divorces that occurred in a particular year. So we are restricted in our civil cases. Ideally, if a system can generate information about their criminal cases, they could also generate similar information about their civil cases. If they're on this, if their civil justice management case management system and their criminal case management system are running the same system. So if you can generate data about criminal cases, you could generate data about civil cases. However, since we're limited to the types of civil cases that we're able to collect data from, we have to be able to ask the providers of data or to determine whether the civil data can be compartmentalized into those buckets. So can we only pull the tort cases? Can we only pull the motor vehicle cases? Can we identify those in any way in the data and then be able to pull out the cases that meet our guidelines on that? That's why the civil data is a little bit trickier, I guess is the best way to put it. So BJS can collect information about criminal cases with relatively few restrictions, but we have a little bit more of a rigid standard as to what we can collect in regards to civil.
So for the purpose of this grant, though, is it mandatory? Is it one of the grant objectives, mandatory objectives, that we collect that sort of related civil data? Or is it just a kind of secondary objective if we feel like it?
It's not secondary. That's one way to put it. So it is a secondary objective to determine whether we can collect the civil data limited to BJS's statutory guidelines. So, you know, rather than saying, contractor, give us all of the civil data that meet these guidelines, and then the contractor goes out and determines that you can't pull those specific cases without pulling all of the data from the civil system, that violates BJS's authority to collect those data. So we're saying, if you've determined that collecting the criminal data are going to be more challenging than initially thought, then perhaps we leave civil data collection to another time. And that is a decision that we are leaving to the contractors. If the contractor is able to look at the state access laws for criminal and civil records and say, we have a pretty good idea of what we can access in the criminal justice records, we have a pretty good idea of what we can access in the civil justice records, now let's see whether or not we can pull these specific case types out of the civil justice system. And that might be the only question that's able to be answered. Because I envision that some systems, you'll be able to identify those cases relatively easily, and they'll be able to provide an extract and say, here's the civil cases that meet those guidelines, while others aren't going to have case-level identifiers that say, this is a motor vehicle tort, or this is a divorce, or this is a contract case that easily pull those cases in aggregate out of the system, if that makes sense. Most case management system software is like, they're designed to be either case level or person level, not to pull aggregate caseloads out of it.
Got it. Okay, thank you.
Does that make more sense?
Yeah, thank you.
Okay.
I'd like to sort of tag on to that last thought about pulling aggregate data. Are you more interested, or to what extent are you interested in preparing sort of a snapshot or census type data set versus assembling a set of protocols and procedures that can be used by others to do precisely the same thing? In other words, point some computer at a data system with appropriate permissions and then be able to pull the same kind of case data in the future.
I think that we wouldn't necessarily regard those as kind of our two choices. I think that we would want to establish the protocols, and I think that we BJS is, I think, recommitting itself or trying to recommit itself to collecting court data, and I don't think that's a one-off kind of activity. So both A, we would want to pull the data, and B, we would want to be able to think about kind of making that kind of a recurring data collection, whether or not we're able to continue to issue solicitations and make awards along those lines. I don't know.
Okay, thank you.
We have a question. Do you envision appeals part of this data series?
Appeals. Okay, so so that was something that I really struggled with, or actually that we really struggled with when writing this particular solicitation, because appeals cases can be so different. Are we intending to exclude it by design? No. Are we intending to include it by design? No. So without knowing what these systems are capable of doing, I'm not really sure what kind of information that we'll get. So I'm imagining a court of general jurisdiction. They're going to receive appeal cases from limited jurisdiction in the non-single tier courts, in courts with more than one tier. So they're going to receive appellate cases, and then they're also going to presumably have cases that were adjudicated in their court system that are appealed to a higher court. So I'm more interested in the cases that the Court of General Jurisdiction hears and rules on. Whether or not we're going to be able to identify the appellate cases it receives from the limited jurisdiction courts is unknown at this time. Does that answer your question?
Yes, thanks. Mm-hmm. We just had one more question.
Mm-hmm.
So there are four phases, and it's pretty clear that BJS will want to kind of assess at each phase and say, do we want to continue pursuing this, or is this going to be a hopeless exercise, or just way too expensive to complete? Do you have any criteria in mind for how things are going to proceed?
That is the question is, at you know, what's the decision rule that we use at the end of each phase?
Correct.
I think that the overarching concern for BJS is the ability to provide national estimates, and of particular interest is national estimates about felony activity in the state courts. And so we would be at each stage asking ourselves that question, and so you know, if after a given phase it's clear that the answer is no, then we would probably walk away from the project. If the answer is we need more information, then I think we're inclined to continue to proceed along those lines.
Okay, thanks. That's really helpful.
And for those of you who are kind of unfamiliar with BJS, perhaps, national estimates do not require a census. That is, we don't have to have every criminal case from every court in the Court of General Jurisdiction in the country. If a sampling strategy is necessary to cover some percentage of the population, and that sampling strategy is one that appears to be viable, BJS does that in other data collections. And so it should be clear that we're not saying at each stage, do we have data coming from every court that we can, you know, line up with one another and put into one big data set. That's not kind of the criterion.
It's 1:30, and I just wanted to report that I did not receive any emails at this time.
I have a question. I came on late. I'm from Westat, sorry.
That's okay. Just so you know, this call is being recorded, and we are asking that individuals do not identify themselves or their organization, so that's okay. Just keep it in mind for the future.
Oh, well, the secret's out. I had probably an ignorant question. So on where it lists the deliverables, is it fair to interpret deliverables everything up to the pilot test, which is deliverable 8, those are basically reports? We're not really collecting or trying to access these data at this point. We're just trying to get what's really available.
That's true. So the first test is going to be deliverable 8, which is the pilot test.
Okay. And just another specific question. In deliverable 8, the reference is made of up to 10 sources. And by sources, you mean, say, publicly available data that's free, data that you have to pay for, et cetera, et cetera. That's what you mean by a source?
So I envision that there's going to be a great variety of data sources for this particular project. So there are statewide systems that do have one repository for all court data. And so in one state, perhaps, to get all of the state's court data, you would contact that repository and identify the need for the data. Because again, the first preference is to see if there is a statewide publicly available data extract that's already in existence or can be compiled or is compiled on a regular basis. So that's the first category. The second category would be the freely available data that are probably maintained in a state court report or a website. The third would be a restricted access where there's either payment to obtain those data or those data are available under a paid subscription service on a website, some sort of, or it's available for the entire state except for three counties. So there's some restriction to that statewide availability. And then a whole source of other things where maybe each county puts its own data online, or one county can provide an extract, but the county next to it cannot. So we picked 10 sources, hoping to have a representation from each of the types of data sources that are discovered in those previous reports. Does that make sense?
It does, although it gets a little confusing when thinking about that and sources across different states, right? That there are types of sources, but then there are literally specific sources, which could certainly run higher than 10 from the way you describe it.
Right. And what we're trying to do is do sort of a mini test of the full data collection project.
Okay.
Hi, I have a quick question that might be a question that gets answered, I guess, during the actual project, so maybe just let me know if that is the case, but are there any concerns regarding the data that's not available regarding, like, perhaps dismissed cases, cases that have been expunged, or that involve domestic violence, certain types? I mean, I know it mentions case type, but I guess dismissals is really the focus. I know some places don't make that publicly available.
So I had already assumed, and I guess I wasn't explicit in the solicitation, that expunged cases would be unavailable because they've been essentially deleted from the case record. Dismissals, I think, is going to vary by jurisdiction whether or not the disposition code that's maintained or provided includes an indicator of whether or not the case was dismissed. I had thought that some jurisdictions would say, you know, they have a filed case, and then in the disposition code, they'd indicate that the case was dismissed. I think if you're referring to cases that get dismissed prior to being filed in court, I don't think we have any way of tracking those because those would live in the prosecution offices. But I do agree, some jurisdictions may not be able to provide dismissed data or dismissals. I know that they likely won't be able to provide expungement. For the dismissals, you're right, though, some states do limit the access to those cases. So there may be variation.
Right, and I apologize, I shouldn't have said expunged. I think I just was focusing on dismissals or cases that records might have changed and been removed.
Right, so for example, I can think of like a probation before judgment case that was filed, you know, a couple years ago, and they completed the probation before judgment and they call it back and then enter the case null pros and then allow the person to file for an expungement. I would assume that that original case would no longer be able to be accessed in the data.
Correct.
I'm going to take everybody's silence as an indicator that you don't have any questions, but please let me know if you do. If you can go around and just let me know if you're still thinking, or I just don't want to keep everybody on the phone longer than necessary.
If you could repeat your email address again, just in case another question comes up, that would be great.
You read my next statement perfectly. So in the solicitation, there is the Ask BJS web address, which you can always use because those always come to me. And my direct email address is Suzanne, S-U-Z-A-N-N-E, dot M as in Mary, dot Strong, S-T-R-O-N-G, at USDOJ.gov. And if you could put in the subject line APACD, that would be very helpful. Okay, if there's nothing else, I'd like to thank you all for calling in today. And
just a reminder, obviously, that the solicitation closes on June 12th.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Okay, thanks.
Thanks. Bye-bye.